Save big money right now at Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Kit of Home Safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are perfect for your living spaces, offering protection and peace of mind. Save big money on all Kit of products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But I love eating people. I love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seeing a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful Mr. E.
And I'm J Clone 410.
410, like a shotgun.
Yeah.
Just made me think of it because turkey season started this weekend here in Ohio.
Ah.
We were walking in the woods today with the kids, and I'm sure we ruined some people's day because I did not remember what weekend it was.
Did you have the judge?
No, I wasn't hunting.
Oh.
We were just going for a walk.
It shoots 410s.
It does.
Yes.
It does. And we're not alone tonight. This is an interview we've been excited for a long time. If anybody keeps up on me and Jay's personal lives, it's been very, very hectic, so we haven't been scheduling nearly as many interviews, but we're getting back into it. This is one I'm super excited for. Why don't you go ahead and introduce him?
Well, listener to the show and former, or is he cop? Is he still a current cop? Former cop. I don't know, one or the other. But Richie, welcome Richie to the show.
Richie the cop.
How are you doing?
Appreciate you having me on. Yeah, I was a cop for 29 years. Right now I'm still working. It's armed private security.
Okay.
Okay, so private cop.
Yeah, I'm now living in Kentucky, so not far from y'all.
Oh, not at all. Ooh, Florence, you even got the lingo down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm learning how to speak Kentucky. It's just people are debating whether Kentucky is the South or the Midwest. I think it's the South.
I think it's the South.
Agreed. Agreed. Yeah. You're blending into your environment.
Yes. Yeah. It's still sound like a Canadian redneck, though. I'm not Canadian. Yeah. I spent half my life in the Pacific Northwest, or I spent my whole life in the Pacific Northwest, Washington State. I grew up in Eastern Washington, the same side. And then on the other half of my life, I spent in Alaska. So we've only been in Kentucky about a year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So relatively new.
And I know we were talking, you live kind of close to the Ark Encounter.
Yeah.
And
less than 10 minutes from there.
So we'll have to, I know we talked about doing a Patreon day out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll have to get you in on that.
Oh, yeah. That'd be cool.
I haven't been in years, but when I went, I loved it. If anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, the Ark Encounter is a Christian museum down in literally Ark Encounter, Kentucky, right? What's the name of the town?
Williamstown.
Williamstown. Yeah. They have an ark, like Noah's Ark there. We went for the Dragons Alive premiere of that exhibit.
Ooh, nice.
Which was it's their dinosaur exhibit.
Well, I mean, that's what they used to be called.
Yeah, I'm not arguing with you.
Right.
But it's really cool. It's a really fun place. They also had the snake thing that weekend.
Nice.
Which I snake story with Atlas today.
Uh-oh, great.
But no, Richie, I mean, Pacific Northwest and Alaska.
Yeah.
I mean, home to some of the greatest North American myths, legends, cultures.
There's more Sasquatch sightings in Washington than any other state, and Alaska is right up there, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the Sasquatch in the Pacific Northwest tend to be shy and polite. The ones in Alaska, not so much. They're mean. I've never had an encounter, although I mean, we get the wood knocks here in Kentucky all the time. So they'll be off in the woods. We live in the woods. And so I'll be sitting there outside reading in the middle of the night because I work graveyard. So on my days off. And then I'll hear the wood knocks across the street, like off in the woods. And so I'll bring the dog out and then it'll just be right across the street in the woods. Knock, 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 knock. And we've had the footprints and everything in our yard. My son saw a Sasquatch about a month ago, right here.
Wow.
I unfortunately didn't see it in broad daylight. And he's not one for telling stories out of school. He just saw it in a field. But something even comes out, you know, we're in the woods here. We have chickens and something will come out of the woods and open our chicken hatch and close it and put the chickens in and out and do the little chores around the chickens we normally do. And it's not going to be a human. No one's stupid enough to go around in someone's backyard in rural Kentucky in the middle of the night.
That's a good way to get a bullet.
Pretty big footprints in our driveway last October. And I actually wanted to ask you guys about those because in the Pacific Northwest, Sasquatch has human looking feet. This had three big claws. They were 18 inches long with like three big claws at the end. You guys are local here. What would that be?
So
is Sasquatch different here?
That's interesting. The three toes. Cause you think of like the Honey Island Swamp Monster.
They had three toes or three claws.
It was three toes with pointy,
like okay. Points on the end.
Oh, okay.
But I mean,
the pictures, I can email you the pictures.
Yeah, please do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean that your area. So first off, your area is where TJ seen the spider crawling red Bigfoot.
Yeah.
That's literally the same exit.
Okay.
Cause I remember cause it's the Ark Encounter exit.
Hmm. Okay.
So our buddy TJ, that was, I don't know, 20 or 30 years ago when he seen that, he was down there on a job and he seen a red, it's, I think the only time he's seen one spider crawl.
Drop down into it.
Yeah, but it was a bright red Sasquatch, I guess ginger, right? You know, like a human ginger. But the claws, I mean, you're in a lot of that dogman territory. We've done a couple episodes about the young man that lost his life down there. And you're only a half hour from where that took place.
Hmm.
Oh.
And
Sasquatch, I want to see. Dogman, not so much.
Correct.
Kentucky has a lot of both. I'm a big believer that Kentucky has a lot of both. And
So in our woods, we have a whole bunch of structures back there, like the tripod structures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That could not be made by humans unless they, you know, brought in equipment. They're just logs and stuff. And we just had a brand new one made 2 weeks ago. That tore up a bunch of trees and made a new one, just tore the trees right out of the ground.
Jeez.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So, I mean, and that can be either a Bigfoot physically doing it or one person we talked to, his name is Randy, talked about witnessing one of those being made in front of his eyes. And he said they, the branch, the trees and the stuff, they moved on their own and they formed themselves like something invisible was moving them. And but he watched it. Yeah, very. So I don't know where I even draw if both things are doing that or if it is just a Bigfoot, you know, whether it's cloaked or interdimensionally moving it or if it's something else entirely that's creating these structures.
Kentucky also has a lot of that, like you already said, the territorial overlap where it's even the stories of those two fighting.
Yeah.
That's where they come from is Kentucky most of the time. 9 times out of 10, if I've heard a story or an encounter with a Bigfoot and
a dog man,
it's in Kentucky.
But the three toes, though.
So that, I mean, we
I
talk.
I can email you the pictures literally while we're talking.
Go ahead and I'll pull them up while we're talking about it.
Yeah.
And with your permission, everybody at home, I'll post them on the Facebook page when this episode comes out.
Because the first thing I came to mind for me was thinking either some of the, like we just brought like an Ark, the dinosaur tracks up in Canada.
Oh yeah.
Or even the, McKelly and Bembe.
Yeah.
Well, these three toed.
Was it I'll look here in a second, but it's long and narrow. Yeah. It makes me think of the famous Thunderbird cast.
Mm.
That's three toes. Yeah. I have that in the other room, which will
you
be on
display here in just a moment.
You're all good. Yeah.
I should have sent them before. I didn't think about it.
Nobody. I never remember anything. Don't worry.
All right. Yeah. We're doing it in the moment.
This is the most professional, unprofessional place you'll ever be.
Well, yeah. There we go. Hopefully, I'm not accidentally sending you other photos.
And we'll find out. We'll share them too. So beware.
Geez, that doesn't look like a footprint.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. No. But yeah. So the three clawed toes, you're in the heart of some of the scary Dogman encounters. Yeah. It starts about your area and goes down to the famous Land Between the Lakes. But I mean, that, like, the young boy that was killed by a canid, his family seen him dragged up 150 foot cliff face.
What, did they see him drag or they find him drug?
They watched him get drug off.
Okay.
All they could say was a big canid.
Yeah.
And it took, I think, the state troopers out there and the rescue team, it was like 3 or 4 hours to get to where his body was. Hmm. Listen to that episode, everybody at home, because I had it all in front of me when we were doing that.
All the improves.
But it took that thing seconds to go climb it. And
with
it took
a person.
Rescuers hours. All right, I'm pulling up the photos.
I sent you one. I've got more. I can send you the rest later, but that's the best one right next to my, you know, size 10 and a half shoe.
Okay.
Oh, I see what I see what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Now that could, so
I've got a tape measure next to other ones. I can send you.
I mean, your shoe's there. I mean, it's big. So that that could be simple wear, because it's in gravel.
Yeah.
To where maybe it just didn't imprint the other toes. The smaller toes.
The little toes?
Yeah. Because in some of the harder substrate, we see that sometimes where you get partials and stuff like that. Just because, you know, like when we walk, where you're not really putting a lot of weight on your pinky toes and your, you know, versus your big toes and everything like that.
Yeah.
So that's hard substrate.
Running down the driveway. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
I try and make the scuff, and my foot just made a little bitty scuff. Just a tiny little one at the toes.
And it's definitely,
the whole foot didn't show, yeah.
Like long and narrow.
Very, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we see with some of like the more juvenile Sasquatch.
And it's not like splayed toes in that track either. Mm-hmm. They're all very close.
I have a tape measure next to them, and they're 18 inches is the biggest one I saw.
That's pretty big.
His toe to heel.
That's sizable.
I don't want to run into anything like that. Yeah. But yeah, you guys, the Bigfoots in Kentucky are crazy. I was going to ask you, because you talked about wood knocks. Do you think that they are actually in there banging a piece of wood on another piece of wood, or do you think they're making that noise somewhere else or somehow else?
I have no idea. It sounds like a hollow wood, like a dowel. Mm-hmm. And here it's always tuck, 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 tuck. It's four of them in series of two.
Huh.
We heard them all the time in Pacific Northwest, but you just hear knock, 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 generally in threes. But here it's four, and it's tuck, 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 tuck. And it just sounds like someone banging two dowels together. But I have no idea. Some people say they're made with their throat. Some people, I don't know. I always do it back, but they've never responded. But if I bring the dog outside with me, they seem to like the dog. Like they'll come right up close in the woods, and I'll shine a light. I can't see anything. It's thick Kentucky woods.
Right.
But they seem to like the dog, and they'll hear it right across the street. And the dog just kind of, my dog is the most low energy, lazy, useless piece of, yeah.
He's not good for Bigfoot spotting.
That's, no, he'll show me where one is. His nose will go that way. Uh-huh. It's not, it's too much energy to stand up.
Right. Yeah.
He's like a 110 pound ham. Someone glued hair to and left in the middle of the floor.
110 pound ham.
Sounds like a good dog.
Yeah. I've had those dogs.
Dog. He's just a tripping hazard to burglars.
Yeah. Gosh.
I'm sure that'll pay off.
When I was in Alaska, so I was with the North Slope Borough Police Department. In the North Slope Borough, Alaska doesn't have counties, it has boroughs. And so this county borough is about the size of Oregon. So it's bigger than Great Britain.
Wow.
Just our jurisdiction alone. And it's the entire northern end of Alaska, so the entire Arctic coast. And it had nine posts there, eight Eskimo villages in Prudhoe Bay. And yes, Eskimo is the right word.
Thank you.
They use in Alaska, yeah. So some people like there's a lot of, you know, Berkeley College freshmen who rank a lot at it, but the Eskimos call themselves Eskimos. And the Inuit actually live in Eastern Canada. So it's like calling all Native Americans Cherokee, because that's
only,
yeah. So Eskimo is a perfectly fine word.
Okay.
And one of the villages I was in is Anaktubik Pass. It's the only real inland one. And the inland Eskimos are called the Nunamiut. It's the last Nunamiut village. And it's like right in the middle of the Brooks Range. So it's hundreds of miles from the ocean. And you can only fly into these villages. There's only one place in our entire coverage area that you can actually drive into, and that's Prudhoe Bay, where the oil is. But Anaktubik Pass, you fly in this beautiful place up in the mountains. In Anaktubik, by the way, a little Alaska trivia, means place of caribou poo. So you'll never forget that fact. So, but there's, when we'd fly in from Fairbanks, we'd come in one of the mountain passes, and I would always, I'd usually be sitting next to the pilot because it's usually a Cessna, and they'd always call into the tower in Anchorage. They'd come in Giant Creek, and I didn't think much of it, coming in Giant Creek. Well, I got to talking to locals there when I was stationed there, and it's actually called Inuksugruk Creek. And in Inupiaq, Inuksugruk means giant person. So they say, yeah, we go hunting everywhere except up there. We don't go up Inuksugruk, the giant person creek. And the reason being is every couple of years, someone would ignore the warnings and go up there in the middle of the night. Something throws boulders at their camps, and they get run out in the middle of the night. They have to run back in the middle of the night to the village. They come back the next day and their entire camp is destroyed. So the Eskimos have just decided, okay, that's Inuksugruk's area. That's his turf. We'll leave him alone. So that's what they call it. But the Eskimos also have something called the Iminarak, and the Iminarak are the little people of the tundra.
Hmm.
And when we first moved up there, I thought, oh, you know, cute little native legend. I was young and kind of stupid and dismissive. By the time we lived up there a couple of years, we believed in the Iminarak, and I've never seen one, but I've talked to dozens of people who see them. I mean, it's all over. One of the villages I was in is Poktovik, and that's over, it's on an island over by Canada. So it's kind of north eastern Alaska. You guys still, okay, there you're back. I make sure you didn't I didn't lose you.
No, yep, we're still here.
Yeah, Poktovik is this beautiful little village on an island in the Arctic Ocean. And when we were there, some kids, there's like this shipwreck on the beach. They were walking down the beach, and then they saw this little man in caribou skins and seal skins sitting on this ship, kind of just dangling his feet off the side. And they got scared, and they ran to the nearest house just about 50 feet away and told the adults. So the adults went out there to look, and he was gone, but they saw these little bitty footprints, and kind of, it was like mud on brand new snow on mud and slush. So they followed these little bitty footprints out on the tundra for a while until they got to a patch of open ground and lost them. And I know these kids, they don't tell stories. They're honest kids. They used to play at my house. Huh. But another post I was in, Point Hope, which is about 600 miles from there, it's the oldest continuously inhabited location in North America. People lived in Point Hope when Jesus walked the earth.
Wow.
But there was my partner at the time, because at the time we were working 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So I would live wherever. I was probably living in Homer at the time. Go fly up there for 2 weeks, work, fly home for 2 weeks and be home. But my alternate there, who he's a wildlife biologist, by the way, he was becoming a wildlife biologist, became a cop, and just never left being a cop.
Hmm.
So he actually is a scientist who knows stuff. But when he was there, he went to meet the flight, and this pilot came in at the airstrip, and he was a white man, so he didn't know native legends, had never been up there before, and he was just white as a sheet. He says, "What did I just see?" So Kenan asked him, was like, "What?" He said, I was on approach, and I saw thousands of these little people running super fast across the tundra. And they had to explain to him what the Iminarak were. And the elder said, oh yeah, it's been so rainy lately that their underground houses where they live, they got flooded out, so they came to the surface. And this guy unloaded his plane, got in a plane, never returned.
Wow.
He was terrified. Hmm. He didn't know anything about the legends, but he saw these things. He's like, I am out of here.
When you say little people, is it like humans, or are they hairy? Or I guess, are they hairless or hairy?
They're like homunculus. So they're they're not hairy. They're like hairy, like a human would be hairy.
Right.
But they can run super fast, and they live underground, and they're generally mischievous. So people will kind of tongue in cheek every time they lose their keys. Well, it was the Iminarak that took your keys, but they're not entirely joking. And so the legend was that the Iminarak used to live among the humans. And mm-hmm. In Point Hope there, one day a human dog killed an Iminarak baby, and it caused a rift. And so the Iminarak were like, oh, screw you guys, we're out of here. And then they went to live underground, and that was the rift. And so they used to live among the humans, but now not so much anymore.
Mm.
And they can apparently run super fast. So one of the guys in the last village I was in, Wainwright, there's a big lagoon there. He was in his boat, a regular modern power boat, you know, can go 40 knots. And he saw an Iminarak on the beach, just in this one spot. And they would say that whenever they hunt in this spot, even when everything's frozen in the winter, they could hear Eskimo drumming. And this is flat tundra. There's no bushes. There's no hills. There's nothing to hide behind. And Eskimo drumming is not just the regular, like, white people drum a bum, bum, bum. It's just specific staccato, a bum, bum, bum. Bum, bum, bum. You know, it's a very specific, They hear it coming from underground all the time. So they know the Imanarik lived there. Well, in this spot in the summer, he saw this guy, this Imanarik, sitting there on the beach next to him. And he kind of tried to talk to him. And the Imanarik just stared at him. So they eventually finished what they were doing, started up the engine. He started going away. And the Imanarik was going, they were going full speed in this boat. And it ran alongside them on the beach for like 2 or 3 miles.
Wow.
They lost interest. Yeah. So up there, it's just a fact of life. The Imanarik, they just don't tick them off. And, you know, if you see one, say hi, share your food or something, but pretty much just steer clear of them.
That's interesting.
I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, I haven't heard of them yet. Yeah.
The how do you say it?
Imanarik.
Imanarik.
Imanarik, yeah.
Imanarik. Because
that reminds me of some of the European stuff with the Nissa, which were little tiny humanoids that used to live in houses and stuff like that.
Hmm.
And
well, the Cherokee little people, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, we've done a lot on the Cherokee little people, and then we did the Sioux. We talked about some of those, and like, what was it, the Pyro Mountain or something like that?
Somewhere out there, yeah. And there's a little people of the Congo then now today that we know about, but they're, I don't know if they're quite
Hawaii,
as.
The Minnehaha in Hawaii.
Yeah, oh, yeah. The Minnehuni, yeah.
Yeah, well, Minnehuni, okay. Yeah.
However you say it.
However you say it, one or the other.
I remember the Minnie part.
Right.
Yeah. Scooby-Doo said Minnehuni.
Ah, so it's canon. Okay.
Wait, that's how I knew the name when I was little.
Yeah.
Because they had it, Scooby-Doo Aloha.
Ah.
And the Minnehuni were attacking.
So the Imanarik, I mean, they'll steal stuff occasionally, but they're just sort of mischievous. You don't want to tick them off, but they're pretty much just harmless. But up there, it's just they know they exist.
That's fascinating. I mean,
yeah,
like you said, the territory you were covering is the size of Oregon or bigger than Great Britain.
That's just one, yeah. One
how many
county or
borough or whatever. Borough, how many cops were trying to handle that area? You and your partner.
We had 40 or 45 sworn positions.
Oh, okay.
But in the villages, it was usually just me by myself. Sometimes in the busier villages, like Point Hope, there'd be two of us at a time. But mostly I work by myself, which I prefer anyway.
Yeah.
You don't have backup, sure, but you also don't have anyone looking over your shoulder going, why didn't you do this? Well, I handled it the way it needed to be handled.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
What all people live in the villages? Is it just the Eskimos?
It's 85% Eskimo, and then, you know, about 15% white and various others. There's a lot of Koreans that live in Barrow, so Uktiagvik is the official name of Barrow. All the villages have, for the most part, two names. There's an Eskimo name and then an English name for the most part. Like Wainwright's also Kali, or Point Hope is Tigiak. But Barrow is what the main village, that's where our police department was based and such.
Okay.
And that's got, I think, 3,000 or 4,000 people that live there.
Okay.
So there's a large Korean population there. They own all the restaurants and the cabs there.
But, wow.
For the most part, the villages are almost entirely Eskimo with a few white people.
And you guys are just there to keep order, basically?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Keep the polar bears. We were polar bear patrol. And
oh, man. Great.
Grizzlies.
Yeah, oh,
that's
wow.
That's another picture I'll have to send you. A polar bear that tried to get in my patrol car a couple times.
No, thank you.
Yeah, like, screw that. Not a polar bear.
The largest land carnivore.
Yeah, that wants you dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're kind of shy. They get a bad rap. People say that they hunt people for food. There's actually only been 2 polar bear fatalities in all of written Alaskan history.
Wow. Okay. Oh, wow. There
have been more people in the state of Alaska killed by house cats than polar bears.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Mm. They're kind of shy and you leave them alone. But the elders told me that, you know, if they're in a place like Barrow where they get hunted more, they're a little more aggressive. But in Koktovik, they know they're not really hunted. So they're just kind of mellow and annoying. They just kind of lay out there in the tundra and leave you alone.
Hmm.
So they know if they're hunted or not in a certain area. You or I couldn't hunt one, but Eskimos can.
Right.
Right, right. Yeah, they've kind of done it for generations.
Yeah. They just sort of, Koktovik, like if you go there in September, you walk outside, you'll see 3 polar bears from anywhere you're sitting, standing.
Yeah, I don't think I'd ever go outside. Whether their reputation is worth it or not.
Right, yeah.
It's just,
They're more annoying. They kind of know what day and night is for humans because, you know, in Alaska, day and night's kind of meaningless most of the year.
Yeah.
But they kind of have a clock in their head and they know that there's less humans at nighttime for some reason. So they'll come in the village and try and steal what they can. And then during the day, they go out in the tundra and just sort of wait it out.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Just go out in the tundra and wait it out.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Huh. But when we lived there, because we lived there for a while, I would sit there in the driveway. The kids wanted to play outside. And so I'd grab a shotgun and I'd sit there in a chair and read a book. Well, there'd be, you know, three or four polar bears just laying there within 100 yards of us on the tundra while my kids are playing in the driveway. It's like, yeah.
Gosh.
Kind of a surreal moment, and I'm just reading a book. It's like, this is not normal.
No.
This is not normal.
No, shoot. I mean, yeah. you just don't pay attention for a second, and you never know what could happen.
Yeah. You never forget what they can do. A lot of people who like more city folks tend to put all wild animals into two categories, either cute, cuddly, and harmless, or mean, ferocious, and out to get them. And I've never seen any animal in the wild that falls under either category.
No.
The cutest little deer can and will kill you if you corner it, and the biggest, meanest polar bear will look at you and realize there are easier meals out there.
Yeah.
So just fear is okay, but respect, you should respect
yeah.
But fear is a pretty good, you know, it's pretty good replacement if you don't have proper respect.
Because I've talked about on the show, I've been really close to a wild elk, and that was probably the scariest big animal I've been next to, and I've been right next to mountain lion and black bear and a big 13-foot alligator I was in a slough with, and the alligator got out of the water because it was scared of us.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, I mean, that was
all
Arkansas.
All animals are afraid of humans.
Yeah, in Arkansas, they're really hunted. Like, the alligators are hardcore hunted. So when they see people, they don't matter how big they are, they know people are bad news.
Right.
It's not like Florida, you know, where they hand feed them and stuff like that. I've only ever been scared of alligators in Florida, where people throw them french fries and all that stuff, because then they'll come right up at you. In Arkansas, they run. The little ones don't let you ever get close to them. And the big ones will try to hide. They're like, please don't see me. And then they'll get up and leave. Black bear, I've never had issues with them when we've been accidentally very close to black bear. Mountain lion, we got really close to a mountain lion. And then the elk, I was probably the most wolves. We've been around wolves a lot, but I'm sure you had wolves up there a lot.
Oh, yeah. They kind of leave you alone.
Yeah.
I mean, there was one lady, a teacher, that got killed by a pack of wolves. She went jogging by herself. And by the way, the tourist judge, I have one of those too. That was my bear gun in Alaska.
I love it.
410 slugs.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
I
couldn't afford a 50 cal, so I got the tourist judge, which is a great, great gun.
I love mine. If you're getting a handgun that you want to have the power of a small cannon, it's lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Run tight. It'll definitely kick you in the wrist.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's not one I enjoy going out to the range and just shooting a whole bunch.
No.
But
it's expensive, but it'll put an impression on a grizzly bear.
Yeah,
bears are the ones I don't trust.
Gosh.
Bear and ground grizzlies, those are mean. That's the only time I've ever been attacked by a bear was a grizzly, and that one actually attacked our helicopter while we were trying to land. But it had already killed two people that day, so that one was, there was something wrong with that bear.
Oh, gotcha.
We had to kill it from the air so we could go back and recover the bodies.
So a grizzly bear had killed two people, seen your guys' helicopter trying to land, ran up and attacking
the helicopter. It was like most animals are scared of helicopters.
Right, yeah.
This thing was like, get lower so I can eat you.
It was cocaine bear.
To jump up. So we had to shoot it from the air, and it had killed this couple who did everything right. It was Richard and Kathy Huffman. They actually did an article in the National Geographic about it. But they actually were very experienced. They did everything right. This bear was just messed up.
There's just
and killed both of them and ate about 20% of his body mass, about 60% of hers in less than 24 hours. Whew. It was really something. Yeah.
Some type of parasite or something's just eating its brain.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this thing was demon-possessed or something.
Oh, there's always
there was something wrong with this bear.
I mean, that's a lot of food for a bear, especially, I mean, grizzlies are big, but, like, you know, they normally sit on a carcass for a while and just start eating on it and, you know, coming back and forth. And because we talked about grizzly bears a lot on Freaky Fauna Friday and polar bears. And then when they run into each other, 99% of the time, even if the polar bear is bigger, the polar bear is the one leaving. They don't want to deal with a grizzly bear.
In Koktovik, we had both. They would interact, and the polar bears would tend to back down because the grizzly bears were mean.
Mm. Just mean.
Pizzlies.
Yeah.
Very rare. That one that they keep dropping off, that white. We talked about that, too. In Canada, there is a white grizzly bear that the Canadian Wildlife Department keeps tranking and dragging back up to the tundra and releasing it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a grizzly bear, not a polar bear. And so this
one of the two growlers mixes they found in nature. I think the last I've heard there were only two was in Koktovik. They found one that they got a little friendly with each other.
I'm sure that's a
made a monstrosity that probably angered God.
Yeah.
That has to be a tricky dance.
Gosh.
To what?
Yeah.
I mean,
a grizzly and a polar bear?
Yeah. I guess it matters who's the male.
Probably. No, it probably matters who's the female.
I once saw an Arctic fox, red fox hybrid.
Oh, wow.
It was huge and pink and beautiful. Like it was like knee high. It was really big and it was pink and it was just really pretty. But yeah.
Huh.
I kind of wish I'd shot that one just for the unique pelt, but
yeah,
it was running the right way, so I let it go.
Gotcha. That would have been an awesome trophy, I guess.
Yeah, it's surprisingly big. I mean, Arctic foxes are kind of ankle high.
Yeah.
Whereas the red foxes aren't much bigger, and they had them both up there, but this thing was like knee high. It was like a small dog.
Hybrid vigor.
That's pretty awesome. Where they get bigger when they...
Yeah, we've talked about that. The hybrids are like often bigger than both parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of love in Koktovik, I guess.
A lot of love.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. That should be the city motto.
It should be,
home of the hybrid.
Right, yeah.
It's a great village, too. Yeah, it actually is a very loving village. The people there are fantastic.
That's one place I definitely want to go up is Alaska.
One day, yes.
Friends, I have a lot of friends up there, and which completely the opposite end, realizing how big the state is, because Frank, if you're listening to this, he's in like an hour out in the bush from Juneau, I think.
Okay. Do you know what village?
So he runs a federal fish hatchery.
Okay.
So I don't think he's near any place because they get fly-ins once a month. Like
there's a lot of little plinket villages around there. Huna is one of them I visited, which is a beautiful little place.
I'll text him because I'll ask him. Yeah. Because he keeps trying to get me to come up there and work, and I don't want to. Because he has videos of these grizzly bears just knocking down the fence and eating salmon out of their runs. And they can't do anything about it.
It's a good adventure. You're young. You can have some adventures here.
I got too many broken parts.
Yeah, I'm half a century old and I still like a little adventure.
Now, I really am excited about one of these things. I want to hear about the lake monster, if you're okay talking about that.
Yeah, so let me give a little backstory on
please.
That. So there's a great book called 50 Years Below Zero, which was written in the mid-1800s by a guy by the name of Charlie Brower, who is a New England whaler. And one of the many anecdotes he told in there, he was a very plain-spoken guy, was that Teshekbuk Lake, which is, I think, is the second or third largest state lake in the state of Alaska, which has 2.5 million lakes, they said the Eskimos would not go out in the middle of it because the monster fish would eat them in their kayak and everything. Just one big giant chomp. So they just stayed out in the shallows there. And everyone knew somebody who lost an uncle or something. And like, hey, so-and-so, come over here. And he dropped his drawers and showed that he had this big scar on his thigh that he showed Charlie of where he had been, that this thing tried to eat him and he got away from it. So fast forward 150 years, I was in Koktovik and we were doing a search and rescue. We were looking for some people that had drowned. And we were like 1,000 feet up. And like I said, there's 2.5 million lakes in Alaska. That's just the ones 25 acres or larger.
Mm.
And we were flying over one that was maybe the size of a city block. It really wasn't even that big. About 1,000 feet up, and I saw a fish jump and eat something on the surface, probably a seagull or something. And I saw, I mean, from 1,000 feet up, a world record king salmon jumping. I wouldn't even seen the splash. But this thing, I saw its back. I saw the white belly because it kind of flopped over. And this thing had to have been 6 to 8 feet long. And this wasn't a very big lake. It was just, you know, like a city block. Like Teshekbuk is larger than some New England states, I believe. So, yeah, and those are real. I've seen them for realsies. But my partner, I told him about it, like the wildlife biologist, and he didn't bat an eye. He's like, yeah, they're probably northern pike because apparently they get as big as the container you put them in.
So that's fascinating. He said that.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a species of, I guess, pike. So they're esox. That's the family group. Pike, muskie, and pickerel. The northern hemisphere, up until the 18th and just a touch of the 19th century, had a hidden species of pike. I think we've talked about it a couple times.
The blue pike?
No, that's not a pike, even though it has pike in the name.
Oh, okay.
No, it's a giant pike to where they had records of them in like northern Russia, Europe, Alaska, Canada. These pike that would get 60, 70, 80 pounds, be 5, 6, 7 feet long. And pike punch way above their weight class as far as what they can cut into because they have the shearing teeth on the side. The front teeth are for gripping. and the side teeth are, if something gets locked into there, they just shake their heads and cut it to pieces.
They're vicious.
They're, I mean,
oh yeah.
Pike,
oh,
yeah. Muskie.
Yeah. They're the bears of the water.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. 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 They're monsters. I love the Esox, but they are, so that's interesting. He thought that because there was probably a decade or two ago, there was a guy trying to see if any of their genetics were left. And it was the same guy that did the beluga sturgeon or the Kaluga sturgeon of Russia. Mm. And they actually found one of the babies. But he was up there, the Kaluga sturgeon, he was up there for 10 months and he finally found one baby. But that proved that, and then there's two adults out there still.
Yeah. Right.
So he was doing that for that, the giant pike. I can't remember its actual name. I think it was like the king pickerel or something like that.
Mm.
And they found just a couple. And I think it was in Alaska. Where they were hybrids.
Oh, okay.
Where they were still, that there were enough of the big ones had been killed off. They were having trouble finding mates. Just like blue whales are doing out in the ocean, that they start breeding with their smaller cousins. So you still create, I mean, obviously it's still going to be a massive pike and they look very similar. So that's interesting he thought that, because they are, I mean, if a pike got 6 or 7 foot long and got a hold of you, it would kill you.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It would, I mean, it'd just tear until it hit arteries, and then you would bleed to death.
I mean, even muskie will attack boat motors if it...
Oh, muskie have killed kids.
Oh, yeah.
Muskie have killed, like, 4, 5, 6-year-olds.
Gosh.
The one famous one was in, I think, Minnesota, where she had, it was like a little girl had a little shiny, like, I don't know, like a waistband or something like that in the water.
Yeah.
And the muskie just launched and grabbed there.
Jeez.
You know, trying to bite the jewels on it.
Yeah.
And she died of blood loss.
Oh, that's horrible.
I mean, I've been bit by little muskie and pike and, you know, just on your hand and stuff like that. And you don't stop bleeding.
Oh, no. They were like razor blades in their mouth.
So that was interesting. I mean, so you seen it. What? You said it was just dark on top, light on bottom, kind of?
Silver on top and with a white belly.
So silver.
Like a regular, it looked like the world's giant, biggest rainbow trout. But it was at least 6 to 8 feet long. And that was just the little wee lake. And I'm see, if I was like a billionaire, I would do an expedition to Chechpuck. You know, in the winter over tundra, bring a big boat out there, some deep sea stuff, and see what you could drag up. But people really don't, to Chechpuck, you can't drive to it. It's the middle of nowhere.
Fly in only.
So,
it's pretty much fly or over the tundra in the winter.
Are most of those little lakes connected by like waterways, rivers, creeks kind of deal?
Nope, they're stagnant and they're very deep. Because of the way, and they tend to be rectangles, and they tend to go in a certain like northwest angle, because back in the day in the ice age, it was so cold that they didn't get any moisture and it never thawed out. And so the entire tundra cracked like a dry lake bed. And then when it started getting summers, water goes down, wedges it apart, and then it keeps getting deeper. So you might have a lake or a little pond that's only 6 feet around. It might be, you know, 15 feet deep.
Huh.
So these are very, very deep.
That's interesting.
I was wondering. First thing that made me think it was like the Carolina Bays. If you've ever seen them,
those are weird.
Because a bunch of lakes, or I wouldn't even say they're not all lakes. Some of them are to become lakes, but it's like a basin basically formed. But they're all like circular, like ovally shaped. But they're all kind of basin coming from the same angle. Yeah, but they're dotted all over.
There's a definite pattern to it.
Yes.
Some people think it's either man-made, or I've heard like the meteor impact stuff, like the fragments.
Right, where it burst. And then
basically just chunks, because they're all angled.
From the same origins place, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you look at the biggest lakes in North America, and they're all in a straight line. So you've got the Great Lakes, Great Bear Lake, Slave Lake, going clear up into Canada, and they're all kind of centered around Hudson Bay. But you look at it, these massive inland seas are all in a line going pointing northwest. Not a geologist, but it seems to be very connected. It'd be very strange that all these are just coincidentally, these massive seas or inland seas are just happen to be, you know, disconnected by thousands of miles, but in an almost perfectly straight line.
Oh, you mean they're all glacial erratics? Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't ask questions.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
That's what Smithsonian told me.
Gosh.
Saving money right now at Menards. vests, from smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more. Kidde Home Safety Products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are perfect for your living spaces, offering protection and peace of mind. Save big money on all Kidde products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Another thought.
That was 10 zillion years ago.
Another thought I had with your, I'm a super excited. I'm a lake monster guy, so I love it. Talking about lake monsters, and you actually seen one. In Alaska, so there were several species. So you said it looked, you know, kind of had the giant rainbow trout vibe.
Yeah, it just looked like a silvery fish, just like any one of a number of
ooh, a silver fish. Varieties.
Slightly dark silver, but yeah, it was silver.
So Alaska has two quote-unquote extinct species of salmonids that got massive.
What's a salmonid?
It's salmon trout. That's the salmon and trout family. The saber-tooth salmon is probably one of the...
that sounds cool.
One, yeah, well, so...
I don't even know what that is, and it sounds cool.
So you know how big male salmon will get, like, the crook in their jaw when they're breeding? So they did that, except they got two big tusks come out. And they would use to fight other males off and stuff like that.
That's what they need to bring back from extinction.
Yeah.
Turn them loose in the lakes and rivers. I don't care if it's dangerous.
Well, they got... They were massive carnivores. They were probably hyper-carnivores. Because every fossil remains we have with them, they always had something in their guts. That means, you know, it's fossilization is very rare, and to have that kind of continuous, that means, you know, they're eating quite often. And they also got really big. You know, some estimates put them up to the 8-9 foot range. And they can get into lakes from fry, you know, so if you're, you know, eggs and fry, you know, aquatic birds will transmit eggs all over the place. So I could see that, you know, what's an animal like that. Because they're monsters. I'm sure a 7 foot trout would take a pass at a human or a small boat, 100%. Because I've seen them take passes, little trout take passes at things at their same size. I've had brook trout get eaten by brown trout that were just like a couple inches longer when I was reeling them in.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Because they're just trout and salmon are opportunistic. I mean, they don't care. They'll try to scarf down anything. They're like bass, right?
I was saying a hamster.
Yeah. They'll try to scarf down anything. So that, you know, the color you were mentioning, because obviously, you know, people listening, white sturgeon, that's going to be the one everybody always suggests. And they kind of have two basic color patterns they come in. The all kind of ghostly white. And then there is a dark, like a silver dark top and then a white belly. In their Alaska, they're finding out now has inland loch populations of white sturgeon. So they're not androgynous anymore in some of these like little lakes. Where, I mean, they live to be, you know, 400 or 500 years old.
Yeah.
So they breed, you know, maybe 3 or 4 times in their life. So either thought is the eggs are getting carried in and creating inland loch populations, or every other century there's giant floods and, you know, they get to come into some of these small valleys that way. You know, when you live that long, you can wait for the 500 year flood.
Right. Yeah.
Because, you know, that's well within your lifespan. And then, but you said, you know, landlocked, so Greenland sharks would be out. But that's always one up in Alaska that people don't understand. You know, you get this idea that they're big, slow, big, slow slug creatures. But we have witnesses and remains in their stomachs of them eating polar bears while they're alive.
Wow.
So
that's ambitious.
Well, they get 24. The biggest ones we have on record are 24 feet long. And right around that 4,000 or 5,000 pounds. So they're a lot bigger than polar bears. And then that wasn't even an adult. Not a maximum sized individual. So we think they actually lay like crocodiles underneath the ice floes and wait for seals and polar bears and stuff to come into the, like underneath the ice and just grab them. Because if they get you, you're not getting out. We always talk about in the show, imagine being that National Geographic guy watching a polar bear get eaten by something.
Some great footage.
Like, what is in the water?
Right, eating a polar bear.
Now, so, I mean, what do you think it was?
Some monster fish that it might have been a pike or just... I know that there are undiscovered animals in Alaska. Because, like, there's entire swaths of the North Slope with hundreds of thousands of unnamed lakes. There's no trails. There's no roads. If you get to it, you're going to have to go 500 miles over tundra from the last time you saw any humanity, and you're still in just virgin wilderness. And so you can't it just odds alone, if you're going to go into some of these lakes, you're going to find something that no one's ever seen before. So Coctovic, again, on the east side, they would go in the winter, they'd go ice fishing on some of the lakes. You know, they'd get the auger, you know, like the 6 to 8 inch hole. And they said about every fifth, they had to bring a lot of hooks with them, because every about fifth fish or so was too big to get through the hole. So they just had to cut the line and let that one go. So, and that's like 6 to 8 inches, and they can't fit a fish through it.
That's big.
That's a big fish. And they just like, oh yeah, too big, snip. Try again. Hope you get a smaller one.
Wow. I want to target them.
I'm probably lake trout.
Yeah.
Lake trout up in Alaska and Russia get monstrous.
Well, especially
the
if
char
there's
too. Arctic char.
Char, yeah. Mm. Char get really big.
Especially without human there. You know, harvesting them overfishing them.
Because lake trout are another one that grow really slow.
Uh-huh.
So in areas like Lake Michigan, for example, it's really hard to get really big ones.
Yeah.
Because they're fished. Uh-huh. You know, people are targeting them all throughout the year. So they don't get to be, you know, the monster 40, 50, 80 pounders anymore.
Right.
They're there. There's a couple of them. I've seen, you know, people catch 40-pound lake trout out of Lake Michigan and stuff like that. But that's an 80-year-old fish.
Yeah.
So that fish didn't get caught for 80 years.
It got released, maybe. Who knows?
I mean, regardless. Survived.
There you go.
You know, 80 years. Yeah. And they get caught, and it still had another 30 or 40 years to grow.
That's crazy.
No, and like you said, Alaska, if there's going to be any place that still has large undocumented fish or any animal, Alaska's up there for me of just a place, like you're saying, you know, a couple Eskimo villages here, there, and then 500-600 miles of nothing as far, like wilderness.
Right. Yeah. You got everything.
Well, the Eskimos stuck around the coast too, because that's where the whales and seals were that they ate.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one Nunavut village inland that's left. So it's just a lot of space, and they mainly stick to the coast.
Why is there only one left?
The Nunavut were semi-nomadic. So they would wander all around. They just follow the caribou around. And in 1976, they decided to settle down. Because they were forming the North Slope Borough. They needed a couple more villages anyway, and these guys were tired of walking around. So they picked Anaktuvik because, like I said, it means caribou poo. And so there was lots of caribou poo, and they're like, well, I guess the caribou like it here, so this is as good a place as any. And so they settled down.
Yeah.
And they made these kind of semi-underground igloos that they lived in. And when I was working up there, there was still a guy living in one. And a lot of these are still standing.
Oh, that's awesome.
They still lived in sod igloos until 1970-something, when they finally moved the village a little bit inland because of the flooding. But those, you can still go in them. They're whalebone sides and roofs.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, they're still standing.
Wow.
It's like out of a movie or a movie set or something. That's so awesome. I want to live in one of those.
Whalebone yurt?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah.
You have to walk. They're only 4 feet tall, so you have to like crawl around on your hands and knees.
But that's all right. It's about how tall I am. Yeah. It works out.
Well, I've known elders that when they were a kid, like their parents would build stick frame houses, and they didn't like them because they're too drafty. So they go out and build an ice igloo in a puyaguk, like a traditional Eskimo ice igloo outside, and I'm living out there. It's warmer.
Wow.
These drafty old stick houses.
Yeah. I'm living out in the ice. It's warmer there.
Well, I'm sure I shared that story of grandpa's grandparents, because he married a Cherokee woman.
Okay.
And she never lived in the house.
Your grandpa's?
His grandpa's. That'd be my great grandparents.
Yeah.
So he married a Cherokee woman off of one of the reservations, and she never lived. She would come in and like use the kitchen and stuff like that. She never lived in the house. She had, grandpa always had a teepee. I don't know what it actually was, right? Because he were, you know, talking to her.
It could have been.
It could have been a teepee. I'm not saying it wasn't a teepee. I don't know what it was, though.
Right.
There's
no
picture. I have one picture of her.
Was it that painting?
No, it's an actual, like.
Oh, okay. An actual photo.
An actual photograph of her. Because she had 16 or 17 kids.
Oh, my gosh.
But she did everything out of the backyard.
He's busy.
Yeah. Yeah. But it just made me think of that, you know, that she was like, nope. Not that his grandpa did not make her sleep outside.
Right, yeah, yeah.
She just did not want to sleep in, like, a bed, in a house. She just liked being outside in whatever she had built out there.
I mean, in my opinion, it's just better that way. You're one with nature.
She lived a long time. Like I said, I think she had 16 kids.
Probably healthier to live that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's quieter, too quiet inside. You don't know what's sneaking up on you.
Right.
You spend
yeah.
a lot of time outside. You tune into things. You come inside and you're safe, but it's weird because it's like, I can't hear anything sneaking up on me.
Yep.
There could be a bear 10 feet away outside and you're safe, but you want to know about it.
Oh, it's like,
yeah, I get that.
Like staying in a stranger's house and every little noise and stuff they know. And, but you're like, oh, what was that? Who's there? What's that? Yeah. Nothing.
Oh gosh.
At least outside, you know your surroundings.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We had, I'm bad with the tangents today. I can already tell. We had a house sitter one time. And we had a Great Dane, and we did not tell him that the Great Dane knew how to, the Great Dane liked to eat ice cubes out of the dispenser. So he would walk into the kitchen and push his nose against the ice dispenser and get ice out whenever he wanted it. So the guy that's watching the house is sitting in the living room, hears somebody walk in the kitchen and get ice. And he's like, hello?
Yeah.
And then he just starts hearing the crunch, 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 crunch.
Yeah.
He calls my mom. And he's like, that's the dog.
Gosh, he could have just looked.
Wait, he was young.
Right, yeah,
he was very young because he was like 16 and it was like a big deal for him.
Right, yeah.
And then there's a guy in the kitchen eating ice.
Right, yeah.
Oh, gosh. Oh, what else about Alaska? I mean, you were up there forever.
Yeah. So another one that, like in when I was in Prudhoe Bay, Prudhoe Bay is the only place in our jurisdiction you could drive to. So that's where all the oil comes from. 1/5 of all the gas you put in your car came through the pipeline there.
Wow.
And I loved being in Prudhoe Bay. It was about area about the size of South Carolina that I covered by myself.
Wow.
And that was, you know, about 11 to 20,000 oil workers. And so I go down the Dalton Highway or the Hall Road down to, you know, about 180 miles through Adigan Pass. And Adigan Pass is about 60 miles from Manitoubac Pass. So that's to the west. So it's kind of a blurry area there. And so when I'm coming in, so you go into the Brooks Range, it's all flat tundra on the north, and then you get into the mountains, and there's this valley that goes, kind of punches into the Brooks Range a little bit to Adigan Pass. So it's like maybe 10, 15 miles across of tundra that just sort of comes in there. And I was driving one day, and it's a beautiful day, not a cloud in the sky, bright and sunny, maybe 10, it's, I think it was around 10 degrees or so. And I look a few miles ahead, and I see like the shimmering you see in the heat on the road, you know, that kind of, only this was really super distinct. And it was in the shape of a giant dome, like miles across. And it was like very distinct. It wasn't like you could look at it right. You kind of see it. And this thing was just sitting across the highway. And I'm like, what the actual crap am I looking at here? And I get up closer. I'm kind of having some trepidation getting up to what am I about to go into? And I drive through the edge of it. And I didn't feel anything. Except you get inside, you know, when you walk into a, like the conference room and people are gossiping and they all stop and look at you, you feel like you walked in on something.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like something super evil, like was waiting for me to leave. But we had a very accurate thermometer on those cars because we needed to be, it was about 10 degrees. And suddenly it gets real cold. The windows are icing up. I'm having to crank up the heat and it dropped down to like 48 below zero.
Wow.
So it dropped about 50 degrees or so. Actually more closer to 60 degrees instantly. And I'm cranking the heat up, just trying to be able to see out the windows that are icing up. I drive across, maybe it was maybe 2 or 3 miles across. And there's that shimmering coming up again. I punch through it again, that sense of evil stops. And then instantly all the ice starts falling off the truck. It warms up again. I have to turn the heat down, it jumps back up to about 12 degrees. So I run up Adigan Pass, do whatever I was doing that day, come back down, and there it is again. I can see it ahead, and it's moved a little bit to the west, I believe. But it's still across the highway. Same thing. I punched through. It just feels like there's some big evil meeting I just went into. The temperature drops 60 degrees. The whole thing ices up. And then I go through the other side, and it warms up, and everything feels fine again. So it looked like a giant soap bubble miles across just sitting there on the road. Never figured that one out. It's even the temperatures, like you might think, okay, maybe in the mountains there was a pocket of cold from cold weather, but we hadn't had those very Arctic temperatures for like weeks, months.
Mm-hmm.
It's not uncommon to be 40, 50 below zero, but this was in the spring and where it was more in the teens. And so we hadn't had those temperatures in a long, long time. So I have no idea what that was. Some people have speculated a portal.
That's what I was going to.
Given that it's right near where the giant people live, it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know about those things. I just know what I saw.
So I mean, immediately when you start talking about it, it made me think of like the portal areas, because even
portal or bubble areas,
yeah, or the bubbles, yeah,
more bubble area than, I mean, same difference really, but
whatever's happening there, to where, because we've had a couple people on the show where they go into these things, and the best way they can describe them is that they feel everything feels gray. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It just felt evil. Like I just walked into this meeting of evil and everyone's staring at me waiting for me to leave.
So
meeting of evil. I think that's called the World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
Was actually held in Alaska that year.
Oh, yeah.
Less lizard people than the World Economic
Forum. It's too cold. Too cold.
Yeah, too cold for them.
No, but I mean the portal areas and that kind of
jets.
It's all great. The portal areas and that kind of stuff. There's a lot of that with the temperature dropping.
Yeah, oh yeah, but that's an extreme.
The Meadow Project had some of that. I can't talk about a lot of that, but the Meadow Project had some where they got down to, I think, negative 40.
Wow.
And it was summer in the South.
Hmm.
And Skinwalker Ranch had some of the things they called on thermal to where it'd be, you know, 50, like you're saying, 50 or 60 degrees colder than the surrounding area. Yeah. But that is, you know, never that big, but Alaska also has, the, you know, the UFO triangle in Alaska is massive. Mm-hmm. And then
saw many times up there
UFOs.
Oh, multiple times. Yeah.
And the biggest UFOs are always seen, not always seen. A lot of the big UFOs are seen in Alaska. Like the two commercial pilots that basically seen a flying city. I don't think we've ever done a full episode on that. But I'll give the short real quick and everybody at home, I'm giving from memory.
Yeah.
But two Alaskan pilots, they were freaking out because the top of this thing was like a city, was what they thought were skyscrapers and that kind of stuff, like very city outline, but it was in a cloud. They were worried that, first off, they were lost. Second off, that their instruments were failing because they were, you know, however many thousands of feet above the ground.
Right.
But they're seeing like a skyscraper, they're flying over the top of this thing, and they're right on top of buildings.
Makes you wonder.
And then when they start clearing it, they see it's actually like a dome on the bottom. So it's almost like a... Like you've in cartoons and depictions and that kind of stuff, like a flying city.
Lando Calrissian, Cloud City.
Yeah.
Like Cloud City. So it's like that kind of thing. And that was, I'm going to say, I think that was the 80s.
Mm.
And they didn't talk about it for about a decade until one of the pilot come forward, like programs came out, and they came out together to talk about it because another, I think a biplane, or like, you know, one of the little puddle jumper planes. Had also seen it that day.
So something was floating around up there.
Yeah, there was something huge. And then there was government cover-ups, like radar images of the thing and stuff like that. So there was a lot.
They'd cover it up?
Yeah, the government wouldn't do that.
Right.
But it was, I think, like 4 or 5 miles across.
Hmm.
Just a massive, you know, massive thing.
Oh, yeah. I've there's pictures that float around every now and then. You don't know if they're real or fake, but like cities in the sky. I mean, it's a weird phenomena.
Yeah, so just... Maybe it's the same kind of deal where I don't know if those things are cloaking and that's kind of that gray or that feeling of dread or evil, or if it's them coming in and out of things.
It's hard telling, yeah.
Or like, you know, we've talked about with the gray areas or the bubble areas that it's kind of that cover, like where the two different worlds start kind of merging or laying on top of each other. Like when Sean's encounter,
right,
where he said the whole thing went gray, they ran into an entity that they could not see, but they could feel the presence of it running, and they could see it reacting.
And they could feel the breeze of it as it went by.
And went by, they could hear it running, they could see what it was doing to the trees.
Yeah.
But they couldn't see it, and that comes... And it also reminds me a lot of, like, the Glimmer Man stuff.
Mm-hmm.
These, and because they kind of describe those as that same wavy, you know, a mirage. Like, if you actually see what they are, it's like that mirage thing.
It makes me think of, too, like, you see... pictures or paintings or drawings of like the guy poking his head through the dome, and he's almost like the world. There's a lot more of the world than you can see. And he's like poking his head out the other side, like into space or something. It's just different. I don't know, shapes and stuff. Just basically the thing is there's a whole veil we're all living within and there's more outside of it. It just makes me think of that.
I mean, we talked about recently that one of the Nobel Prize winners from last year about perspective realities.
Mm-hmm.
The double slit experiment and that kind of stuff, that reality reacts to being viewed. So there's a lot more, like, it's so weird. It's so hard to explain, but they have done this test forever to where once you're watching something, it changes how it behaves.
Behavior, yeah.
And then when you look away, you know, 99% of the reality comes back.
Right.
Now, I don't know what you experienced, but it's definitely, I don't think you're alone.
And you might have the first experience we've heard where someone can physically see that barrier and then you're coming up and then go right through it. And then the same thing the other side. That's crazy.
And it was just the same on the inside. I mean, nothing visually changed. It just felt really creepy and it just felt like slightly darker and then very, very, very cold.
I wonder if that area is just operating on a separate like frequency, which makes it either physically appear that way, like you're a barrier, like an actual physical barrier. Mm-hmm. It was just everything's slightly different. I don't know.
Somebody left a door open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was actually Harp.
Gosh. What you were talking about there reminded me, like in a couple years ago, I lived in Spokane, Washington, over on the same side, by Idaho. And I had a second job where I'd get called out to do organ transport for organ donors. And I was driving through Moses Lake, Washington. So right smack in the center. So a lot of people don't realize most of Washington and Oregon is actually desert. It's high desert.
Hmm.
And the central is just nice and flat. That has nothing to do with the story, by the way. So I was driving through Moses Lake and broad daylight. And I looked over one of the fields there and I see what can be described, you know, those flying wing, I think it's the B1.
Yeah.
Where it's just got the bump. It looked like that, only a silvery white, and it looked like someone had stretched it out like a half a mile wide.
Oh.
Just hovering over this field and with a little bump in the middle. And I was trying to place it, like I wasn't figuring out what I'm seeing. And I'm getting closer and I'm within a quarter mile of it. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna be right next to it. I'm driving towards it at 75 miles an hour. And I kind of look at that, look at the highway, and it was gone. Just look back in the 2 seconds I looked at the highway, it disappeared. And there was another guy, though, on the Alaska Airlines flight overhead who reported the UFO reporting line that he was above that at that very moment looking down. And he saw a giant silvery white saucer floating there. And he stared at it and saw it zip off real fast.
Hmm.
So it zipped off. Well, you know, not a cloud in the sky. There's nowhere it could have gone. And this thing was like a half mile across.
Wow.
Just very low to the ground, maybe only 50, 100 feet off the ground.
Wow.
That's not far from your what's his face's hole there in Ellensburg. You guys talk about sometimes
Mel's hole.
Mel's hole.
Yeah, it wasn't far from there.
Maybe it came from Mel's hole.
Maybe
was it piloted by
UFO sightings in Washington than any other state?
Did you
missile silos out in the desert and?
Did you happen to see if it was piloted by a tumor seal?
Nope, couldn't quite see.
I thought I was rats. Wearing that shirt.
Couldn't see in the windows.
You couldn't confirm or deny.
Yeah. Everybody.
I've seen several UFOs, and that was definitely the biggest and weirdest because it was just hovering there.
That reminds me of
slight angle.
I forget who we were talking to had that same story where they seen a big long UFO like building size out in that field when they were driving. Remember this?
Kind of.
I can't remember who it was, but they like building size, like warehouse size UFO out in a field as they're driving by. Same thing you said. They turned to look back at the road and look back at it, and it was gone.
L.A. Marzulli had a, somebody had a, one of those kind of famous in the blurry sphere guys had a story about that. I can't remember. I think it was L.A., but I can't remember.
I can't remember who Jay's talking about because.
It was someone we interviewed.
That we interviewed?
Yeah. Or someone told us. Sounds
familiar to me.
Yeah. As someone we talked to that shared it with us. That's what they saw.
I'm having trouble now.
Me too. I mean,
almost 400 episodes.
Yeah. I don't remember specifically who, but. I remember we talked about it because I can visually reimagine in my head what I was imagining they were telling me.
And I don't.
Right. Yeah. Every now and then that happens. But yeah, it's a weird, and especially almost like it knew you were watching it because in that split second you looked away, that's when it decided it's gone.
And you said
hundreds of people must have seen it. It's broad daylight. I mean, not that Moses Lake has that many people there, but it wasn't exactly hiding itself.
Right
off the I-90.
Major highway.
And you were,
of course, did I grab my phone? No, of course.
Nobody does.
Right there.
Yeah.
But it's like I was trying to place it. You know, I wasn't realizing I was seeing a UFO at the time because I'm just going scrolling through my brain of things I know. It's like, what is that? It's not a crop duster. It's
right.
Know, what am I seeing? Is it a balloon? Is, you know, and by the time it zipped away, and I'm like, oh, stupid. It was a freaking UFO
right
in front of you.
No, but I mean, that's humans. We don't do that. I mean, I've been, like we've talked about already this episode, mountain lions, elk, I don't have any pictures of them. Because every time I've seen him, I'm like, well, you know, that's right there.
Yeah,
well,
gotta handle
I'm
this
going
situation.
The other way.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you try to turn in the sighting and they're like, well, did you get a picture of it? No. I was 20 feet from a mountain lion.
What do you mean?
I wasn't expecting him to be there.
Everyone has a camera on them at all times now. I mean,
yeah.
There should be nothing hiding out ever in nature.
Gosh, that's that thing.
I've been hunting all my life. I've never seen one.
When I was a biologist, I heard that constantly.
I still hear
about endangered species. Not, yeah. Not even, you know, things we're talking about necessarily.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So was it, how thick do you think it was? You're talking like it was this big flat thing.
It looked thin, super thin.
Hmm.
Like I was looking apparently right on the edge of it, but it looked like it was super thin. Like if you were standing in it, you'd have to crawl on your hands and knees.
So really, really thin.
Center bubble, which I assume was a cockpit of some kind.
You'd imagine.
It was massively huge.
I'm wondering. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I think there was. I'm trying to remember. It was after World War II, where they had all the secret prototypes of all kinds of aviation things they were working on,
mm-hmm.
And I think there was something kind of, not that big, but kind of similar to what you're describing. Like you talked about the flying wing, but I think there was another one to where, because I just remember it literally looked not like a UFO, like not quite like a cartoon UFO, like a kid drew, but kind of like that, but it was super flat and it literally just had a bubble where just big enough for a person to sit in.
Mm-hmm.
And that was
precisely what I saw. Yeah.
But I mean, we're talking this, you know, this thing was 30 feet across, not a quarter of a mile across.
Yeah, this, yeah.
And I always wonder that, is that found technology that they're trying to reverse engineer?
No.
Is that, huh?
No.
I mean, it could be like the Nephilim and all that
okay,
stuff.
Okay, yeah, maybe.
I'm not talking, you know, I'm not a big proponent believer of actual extraterrestrials visiting Earth.
Right,
but
me either.
Interdimensional, Nephilim, all that stuff, you know, sure. I think it's more likely.
Secret government dark programs that we've sunk trillions and trillions of dollars into that we have no idea about publicly.
Watch The Mist.
So, of course,
they've done that.
We have technology that we've researched and developed.
So, yeah.
That we're not privy to.
I always just wonder if it was something like that, and that's why it kind of looked like it. Is it because they were trying to build
the same thing, but
the
bigger?
The same thing.
Just scaled up.
Or, yeah, the big thing is the actual one, and they try to build one.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay. Human-built one is a lot smaller.
Yeah.
Or that kind of thing, where they're, I mean, for anybody to know, Wright Pat here in Ohio literally had the Nazi reverse engineering wing, where any technology they took in World War II, there was some of the best scientists in the world, their whole job was just to reverse engineer it. They were, like, months from shutting down when the Roswell crash happened, and all the stuff from Roswell within 24 hours was in Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah, it's nuts.
And that wing never shut down, weirdly enough.
Hmm.
You know, it was about to get shut down, and then he just never did.
Huh. Odd.
So do you think it was... I mean, what do you feel about it? You've seen it.
I think it was a UFO. I think the UFO... I think aliens are not from another planet. I think it's some sort of creepy, demonic Nephilim program.
Yeah. Agreed.
And I think that they're probably trying to create some that army of in Revelation, the 200 million, because they think they can win, apparently. And I find it interesting in Revelation that at the final battle, in the you know, the forces of heaven show up, but Jesus defeats them. So the forces of heaven are going to have an easy day because Jesus is the one who defeats them. So
always.
Yeah. So 200 million, might as well make it 300 million. You're going to lose. But I got a hunch that they're building biological things that are probably just meat suits for demons.
Yeah, agreed.
I think that like the grays are probably just some sort of creepy biological half human, half whatever.
Abominations.
Something to sweep the floors. You know,
yep.
They're just kind of drones. I think that the reptilians and the insect ones are also some creepy biological mixing DNA thing. But I think those are demonically possessed. I think that's a meat suit for the demons too. And when one dies, they go to the warehouse and get a new one. And I think that the Nordics, you know, these big, beautiful, 7 feet tall, blonde hair, blue eye, I think those are living Nephilim. I think those are actual modern. I think the first Nephilim they created in Genesis 6 was potluck, whatever came out genetically. They got these monsters. And I think they've gotten better at it. Mm. They're actually splicing DNA and creating these things with, you know, no ethical considerations to create this beautiful army of aliens. And I think if you probably killed one, it would become a demon, according to like the book of First Enoch. That's my own take on it. I think this is going to be their final take on, you know, trying to take on God. When, you know, Jesus comes back and believers are going to go up into heaven, the devil's going to have some explaining to do. That's going to be a hard thing, because the Christian rapture is not exactly a secret. And but if he says, no, 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 don't worry, that was us, we're the aliens, we put you here, we took away your Christian grandma, she's fine, we just took her to another planet to help her out, you know, bring her back up to speed, but now it's adult time, we can all have the age of Aquarius, and you can be one of us, and we'll patch in some of our DNA, and it'll be awesome time.
So
that's my end time hypothesis in a nutshell.
I mean, we're pretty much there with you. I mean, we've talked about that kind of stuff a lot. And I mean, like you said, the meat suits, Joel, our buddies, talked about that for years and years now.
Nephilim portal babies.
Yep. Listen to that 5-hour long episode, everybody at home.
Mm-hmm. Why are they taking people's eggs and sperm and, you know, babies? Why would they do that other than they're building stuff?
Right. 100%. I mean, absolutely. And even if you look at, because when we had a Daryl Sims, for example, on the show, we talk about the organs, that, you know, actual cattle mutilations or livestock or whatever. The glands, they're literally targeting glands, reproductive systems, for certain hormones.
Mm-hmm.
And we see the same kind of thing in, you know, when they're making monsters now, like Colossus Bioscience is literally making monsters.
They're not making wolves.
They're not making dire wolves. They're not making dire wolves.
At all.
I think it's awesome. Creepy, but awesome.
I mean, playing God.
Yeah. Did you know that none of that DNA is as zero, that wolf that they claim they made had 0% dire wolf DNA? Zero.
You know, I think as long as we're angering God already, let's get that saber-toothed tiger. Let's give it some of that. Get some, you know, the rhinoceros. We'll make it a unicorn.
Yeah.
As long as we're already making God, let's make something really horrific.
Shoot, throw some saber-toothed salmon in there too.
I was going to say dragons.
Yeah.
Let's go full bore.
Yeah.
The Bombardier Beetle, Breeze Fire.
Oh, yeah.
Make something truly.
Let's make Bombardier Beetles 5 foot long.
Yeah.
That'd be like a nuclear bomb.
Yeah, basically.
Gosh.
It would be cool.
But
it'd be like the dinosaurs on Jurassic Park that sprayed the
Dilophosaurus.
Yeah. Those are real.
Yeah. Those are real. no, but I'm with you a lot of the grays, the all that stuff. So we've talked a lot about that aliens, true aliens, let's say true extraterrestrials from another planet somewhere in space, would look nothing like us. Or any life, they wouldn't mimic any, or look very similar to any life.
In our biosphere. Yeah.
So like the reptilians are big lizards, or bipedal lizards, you know, mm-hmm. not quite dinosaurs, but I mean, they have really like lizard traits.
The Arcturians, strangely human looking.
I mean, half, you know, out of the, whatever they say, 98 species identified now of extraterrestrials, 80 of them are just blue people.
Or with some form or, you know, or the other. They're people.
Yeah, they're humans. You know, they have fingers and thumbs and...
Right. They're built like us.
In Sasquatch.
I mean, they should look like giant piles of sludge and electric coral and, you know, all kinds of stuff. You know, they should be all kinds of body plans. I've shared the story 100 times.
Octopus.
Cephalopods. I mean... Yeah. I've shared the story 100 times about the only time I think maybe aliens actually visited Earth. It was the giant bearded crabs. Because crabs, everything turns into crabs.
It's a good body plan.
Carcinization. There's a word for it.
Yeah.
well, octopus are those things. That's the closest thing to aliens. Those things should not exist.
They are 3 hearts, 9 brains, eye-like organs on the ends of their tentacles.
And very intelligent. Yeah.
Extremely intelligent.
Mm-hmm. We'll throw that into whatever monster we're making. Let's throw some tentacles in there.
Just make them big and be able to live on land.
Oh, gosh.
More. They live on land more.
True.
But back to what we were talking about, too, with I think we're really for reals in the end times for realsies. And I think Jesus is coming any day. And, you know, everyone wants to earn their way to heaven. But the good news is the Bible says if you confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus, believe in your heart God has raised him from the dead, you will be saved.
Amen.
There's nothing you can do that's good enough to get your way in. There's nothing you've done that's bad enough to get your way out.
Yeah.
Just confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus, believe in your heart God has raised him from the dead, and you are in the club.
Amen.
And God knows everything you've done, everything that's been done to you, and his blood covers it all. And it's simple to matter. accept it, and there you go. You're in the club.
Your price has already been paid.
In the clouds, we can argue about whether or not, you know, pray to Mary, or whether or not Adam and Eve had belly buttons. We've got eternity to hammer all that out.
Right.
A lot of fun.
Oh my gosh, I never thought about that in my life.
What? If Adam and Eve had belly buttons?
Yeah.
What if they didn't have nipples?
That is going to keep you up tonight.
Why'd you do that to me?
Yeah.
They didn't have nipples.
All right.
So, that's it.
That's what we'll end on for tonight.
That's your test. That's
if Adam and Eve had belly buttons and nipples.
All right, yeah. That's his test for testing somebody new that we meet.
Oh my gosh.
After a long night, he just randomly drops
men.
Well, yes. Of course, men. He just drops. Show me your nipples. Just
make
to see
sure if you're real.
Yeah.
Well, because clones don't have them, or they're like paste-ons.
Right, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I found one.
Now I know another test.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah. It throws people off, that's for sure.
All right. Richie the Cop, we want to thank you for coming on. We'll have you back on again, because I know we have more stories to get through.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've got other blurry stories to tell, too. And if anybody wants to get a hold of me or ask questions, richiethecop7@gmail.com.
There you go.
There you go.
I'll put that in the link below for everybody at home, too. We've had so much fun talking to you. We have a tradition here before we go. We're going to all, you know, count down from three, and we'll all yell bye, and then the outro will play.
Okay.
You ready?
Yep.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, thank you for listening to Cribs of the Corn podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye.